Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Thank you for coming, Jason. EcoTrans, another episode where you'd be close to the biggest site clean, rubbish removal from volume home sort of person in Victoria, you'd say. I don't know how to say that. So why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us what you do.
Sure. All right, yeah. So Jason from Eco360 Group. So it's
fuck that up. You EcoTrans.
Well,
on
we're
top.
So EcoTrans is the trading company that you would see around for the site cleaning side of things. Mm-hmm. But I also have a couple of other companies that do work with EcoTrans on our tipping, our transfer station, and then we have our own fleet servicing company as well. And they're sort of branded under Tip360, Fleet360. And we've got our EcoTrans company, which is our trading company. Yeah.
Okay, and what do you do?
So predominantly it's site cleans for volume builders. So we pick up all the rubbish on the volume building sites. We work with the top 6 out of the 10 volume builders in Victoria and a lot of boutique builders as well, removing their rubbish and then doing stage site cleans over the duration of the build. So basically, you could get EcoTrans in for pre-site prior to the site cut, and then we would be the last person to visit, usually a day before handover.
Oh, yeah.
Conducting site cleans throughout the whole thing.
Can't imagine there's much rubbish at the day before handover style, but maybe I'm wrong too.
I think, you know, sometimes they work to the last minute to get the houses handed over, on the time or...
Yeah, perfect. Okay, and how do you see everything? Tell us a little bit about your story and where you're up to now.
Yeah,
I think this is the way that we do the podcast now. You tell us a little bit, then we talk shit.
Sure. So I studied entrepreneurship actually at university. I guess I've
is that a course?
It's a course held by RMIT. But if we go before that, I've always been about business. I kind of found my way into sort of machine work and site cleaning just through a path. I didn't get a job in this industry and go, okay, I could start this myself. It's more the case of I wanted to start a business and site cleaning and rubbish removal found me.
Yep.
I guess from like a young age, I like did, you know, eBaying, buying stuff from trading posts and putting it on eBay, or even selling marbles at primary school, or sunglasses at
lemonade stand, you know.
I had a lemonade stand Kumquat actually. Kumquat stand out the front of my house.
No one's buying them. The bad business, that one.
So I guess my neighbour didn't have a lemon tree. They had a kumquat tree, which is another citrus type of fruit.
I'd really like to hear if anyone's ever heard of a kumquat.
How do you spell that?
I've
never eaten one as an adult, but I remember as a kid we'd pick them down off the tree and
can
eat them.
Can we get a look up on a kumquat?
I guess it looked like a mandarin.
Nah, surely this is made up citrus fruit. Like we've got mandarins, oranges, lemons. Like I've never seen...
Kumquat, there it is. It didn't really look like that.
It's a kumquat, like what I was saying.
There they go. It definitely gives me respect to when you see a kid with a lemonade stand, I stop and I give him, you know, what I about pay cash some, for their...
What about some other weird citrus fruit that no one's ever heard of?
I'm
do you buy
it
then?
As well. You know, that tastes better than a grapefruit. I think.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess, yeah, business... Lawn mowing rounds, you know, all the stuff.
All
right?
of it. Yeah, I used to help bale hay. I used to, yep. you know, deliver yellow pages and white pages, yeah. you know, running around after my grandpa. You know, there's people who want to earn, and the earners always will somehow find a way.
Yeah, I think paper round, that's one of the things. I think you speak to a lot of business people. And their first job was a paper round. And I guess it's something you don't really have to do, but you do it because you want
them. I think also, though, like, you know, that's going to change. Like, what is it now that the kids are going to do? Like, no one fucking gets a newspaper or, you know, yellow pages, white pages don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, so what are the kids going to do? We're going to end up finding out that it's the kids that are monetizing their YouTube or...
I don't know,
some shit. Yeah.
I guess that's the thing. Yeah, when we were younger, if we wanted money and for me to buy my first BMX or whatever, my parents were like, well, you got to save for it. And so I got a paper round. And it's like exploitation. I think it was like $3 an hour. It took like 2 or 3 hours to do my round. And then,
I was telling my daughter, like, I used to work at a chicken shop in a shopping centre, and I got $4.90 an hour, and I used to do a 10-hour shift on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, surely, like, looking back, it was a chain. It was a franchise. Yeah. You can't pay a 15-year-old kid $4.90. Surely not. And for 10 hours on a Saturday at a casual rate that I never, like, I'd get a pay slip, but I reckon it was just written on a napkin, like, yeah, $4.90. I got a kid. They give me $50. And I used to be stoked that they gave me $50 on a Saturday when I was 15. I was the richest kid in the cafeteria, yeah. first off. Second off, I used to thank them for rounding it up a dollar. Like, thank you, please have some more.
That's just changed. I don't know if that's like an old school thing or if that's, you know, like respect for your boss or for the person who employs you, but that we'll talk about that.
I had an 18-year-old tell me the other day that they really needed $100,000. They had no experience, $100,000. And you go, but I often think this about myself, and I'm sure that you do. So when you started off, we'll get back to the starting story, but when you started off, the value of a dollar was something more than what it is today. But sometimes you get like a bee in your bonnet, and you're like, you know, you might be spending... We'll just make it easy. We'll say you spend $100,000 a week on shit, right? Easy. And then sometimes someone comes to you and they're like, this is $5,000. You're like, fuck, no. There's no way I'm spending $5,000 on that. But you need to spend $5,000 on that because the times have changed, you know? There's no $4.90 in a chicken shop no more.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So it's funny, I guess, as you grow in business, you know, your spending habits change, I suppose. And like you said, you're buying machines or whatever, spending a couple of $100,000 and kind of dropping it pretty liberally. Where back in the day, you would, be thankful of having $50.
I was thankful for that dollar. I can remember conversations. Yeah. I still, like, was having it with my brother. And I'm like, this job's so great. Every week they give me an extra dollar, you know, in my pay. And they don't have to.
I feel it.
And then that sometimes my Saturday shifts would be Sundays. And so Sunday shift, still $4.90. and I was still happy. But yeah, so okay, you started off with a foreign citrus fruit stand,
yep.
and then you went and studied entrepreneurship, which I never even knew that was a thing up until this very moment.
At year 12, the careers counselor said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I just want to own a business." And I thought it was probably going to be plumbing business for some reason. I had an uncle who was a plumber, and I thought he had nice motorbikes or whatever. I thought that would probably be somewhere where I wanted to do. But anyway, I said, I want to just start a business. I want to be a business owner. I didn't care what it was. I didn't get the enter score that I needed to get into entrepreneurship. And so I studied international trade, import and export for a year where it just clicked to me. So at school, was running a bit of a muck. You know, I wasn't fully, I was dedicated to be at school, never had a sick day, never didn't show up to school. But when I was there, I found it was challenging to get the results, I suppose. Mm-hmm. To be fair, now I look at it, I think it could be like attention deficit to what I'm not really interested in learning.
You don't say. I think that most, at some point, like the most of the people sitting on this podcast end up with if we've got interest, we'll put our back into it. But if we have none, then I'm telling you, I was no good at Romeo and Juliet. Hey, To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch. Yeah, got it. However, don't make me write an essay. I'm just not that guy.
Yeah, I'd go to the English sacks and I hadn't even read the book.
You're going to struggle to do a good job at that. We wonder why you didn't get the ATAR score or whatever it is now.
I did do good at the business and the legal studies and the subjects, the woodworking and the automotive subjects, things I had interest in, I did that well. So I did the international trade diploma and did that really well. And in fact, it was odd because there was people in that class that were looking at my work and going, oh, what's the answers to this? And it was like a real...
That red-headed geeky bloke. Yeah. Well, let's ask him for
some
help.
That's what it was like. So then it gave me like this thing, oh, I'm good at this. I finished that with good results and I got straight into the entrepreneurship course the following year, which was a 3-year Bachelor of Business degree. Did that and didn't think that I was like an entrepreneur, you know what I mean? Like, because there was some guys that were just switched on. They could talk really well in front of the class. They maybe were from families of other business people. And there was always this thing, is entrepreneurship, can it be taught or is it like a...
What do you think, can it?
I think you want to get as much information as you can in your field. And I think any business person would benefit from going, learning entrepreneurship at university or
so
any study.
So is it nature or nurture or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both.
So if you don't have it, you ain't ever going to get it. But if you have it, we can train it.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Better, yeah. I completely agree. There are some blokes who just ain't got it, yeah?
Yeah.
They just ain't got it. And then I think that it shows all the way around. You know, even with people who win the lottery, have a higher percentage chance of going bankrupt.
Sure.
Why? Because you can give a bloke $1 million, but if he don't know how to spend it, he's going to waste it and piss it all away. And then by the time he realises he's got nothing left, it'll be too late.
Yeah, and then you got the guys that are super hard workers and they do everything right in terms of – and I guess – they could have been the A-grade students at high school and now A-grade employees, but they don't take the risk that us C-grade students did.
I've put up a post about this on LinkedIn, actually, you know, that it's, in my mind, it's not necessarily the A-grade honours students who make the best way in business. You have to have a little bit of grit in you. You have to have a little bit of cowboy, a little bit of spunk, you know, to sort of go against the grain and everything else. When sometimes those A-grade students, they're very rigid, they're very set, you know, like they've learned the way that it should be done. Yep. But if you just followed what everyone did, now you were telling me a story before about you designed something. And what was that thing you designed? I told you. I'll get you to say it. Come on, give it to us.
The polypropylene bag, PPE.
Are you right? Probably
check it.
Polypropylene.
I'm pretty sure. I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
PPA.
So you designed a bag to go in. So everyone's seen you drive down these new volume builder sites. Every place has a temporary fencing box that they make that everyone throws their shit in and around.
Yep.
You made a bag that goes in them so you can just, instead of driving the machine in there and all of your shit going everywhere, you just pick up the bag and fuck it off?
Improve the system, yeah.
There we go.
Improve an old system is what we did.
And make more money.
And, well, yeah, in turn, do more jobs, make more money.
Well, the site's cleaner. It takes less time. You know, so therefore that food, well, I've done some site cleans in my past, you know, especially when a guy had, let's say, 10 or 12 to do in a day, back in the day, he'd get me in my posse track and he'd come, I'd grab it, crunch it, throw it in the back of him, go down the street, he'd piss off to the, you know, the tip, and then I'd clean up the site and go down and, you know, consolidate up the rest of them. It took longer to clean up after you'd loaded the truck than it did to actually load the truck sometimes, because it literally goes everywhere the second you drive in.
Yeah.
So the bags are real clever.
It's good because it uses a dead part of the property as well. So I guess, you know, traditionally there was, you could use a skip bin, let's say, and put it right on the driveway where you couldn't get crane trucks in to lift your trusses, or you couldn't get deliveries or whatever. So they thought, okay, what's a better idea? Obviously have a temp fence cage structure in an area of the property that's accessible to a bobcat, but in an area that's not utilized on site and next to the toilet or whatever. But like you said, the method to pick that up is outdated. Shit.
Yeah, really bad.
And then the cancel, and also you're crossing the footpath a lot, and that's kind of dangerous as well with pedestrian traffic and whatnot. So you've got to have some extra people making sure you're doing that safely. Then you've got the windblown litter aspect, and then how you're recycling that. So this is the other thing, I guess, with our industry. You've got waste levy increases, which has just gone up.
Constant waste levy increases. They may as well just start increasing it incrementally daily. Like,
hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You know, instead of doing it once a year, 40% or, well, what did it go? $40.
$40.
$40. It went, you know, it went $40. Well, shit, we can do $1 a week.
That's 25% on, you know.
Yeah, man. So we move a lot of the contaminated waste. You know, it's actually ridiculous. It just drives the cost up, and the processes aren't changing.
So I guess that's the whole point of it, is they say, okay, say someone like us who does volume builder's waste, they say, okay, well, if we charge Ecotrans an extra $40 a ton for all of their rubbish that goes to landfill, they're going to put some systems in place to reduce that. And, well, we did.
Yes.
But we have, and we're continuing to. But I suppose the other thing is, your sole traders, your bobcat tipper guys, they've now got two options. One, pay this ludicrous landfill cost, gate rate, or tip it.
Illegally.
Illegally, yeah.
Which has exploded. You've seen it around, I've seen it around, the amount of sites that are getting illegal rubbish dumped on them has gone through the roof. And mind you, I'm sure that everyone's been on TikTok and Facebook and seen an Indian dump site where they're pushing like thousands or millions of cubic metres into a river.
Mm. Yeah, we're seeing that, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, I remember one, it's in Indonesia. They're stacking the dirt. They're stacking the rubbish. It's 60 metres high. Yeah. They've got digger passing it to digger passing it to... I understand what we're trying to do, and I understand that we do need to lead the way, like, because obviously we are part of the first world, let's say. But are we leading the way really with waste levy increases? When I started moving contaminated dirt, Cat C was like, one, it was a hard threshold to get to. Cat C was in terms of its level of contamination. And second of all, it was around $80, $75.
Yeah.
Right, to for the cart and dispose and me making the very little amount of money that I make.
Sure.
Small.
Yeah.
You know, I pretty much do milk and bread money and I do it for the love.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And so there was 70, 80 bucks. Let's say $70 on a really good one, maybe even 60 if you got a fucking good job.
This is when dirt was only like $3 a meter to tip.
To tip, $5. By the way. Yeah.
$5
a meter to tip it was back then. You know, depending on where you were, I always went to the closest.
Yeah.
Now I think we gave a price, and I don't want to put too much of our pricing out there because it's, you know, I have a lot of eyes that watch my stuff, but it was around about 160. You know?
Yeah. A ton.
A ton.
So yes, 1,600 plus per truckload.
Well, we have bigger trucks. Well, yeah, so, well, like, sure. Yeah, some of them are $3,000 a truckload.
Yeah, it blows out.
And that's just Cat C. Cat A is now looking up around the 500, 450, 500 a ton.
Yeah.
Now you're at 10,000, 15,000 a load. And then sprinkle a little bit of the spicy biscuit on top, a little bit of asbestos, and now all of a sudden it's 800, and there's asbestos everywhere.
It's funny that, you know, asbestos, obviously, as a separate waste stream, it's not that bad to get rid of. You know, once it's mixed in with your spoil.
Yeah.
And so that's, I mean, the plumbers need to know that a little bit more because, we get the builders go, hey, we've got this pile of dirt, it's got asbestos through it. You know, they broke some pipes. And you're like, why didn't they just stop there? You know what I mean? Stop there, get the hygienists in.
I actually had a job today that they found the pipe. We weren't actually digging there. We're digging next to it. They found some pipe underneath the footpath that was asbestos pipe.
Yeah.
You know what it's going to be? It's going to be a bag.
Yeah.
It's going to be a guy rocking up with a bag to put four hundred mil lengths to pick it up. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, including his time, the bag, the disposal, and everything else. It might only be $500.
Yeah,
you know, because it's 10 kilos.
Crush that into the dirt.
Crush that into the dirt, and then all of a sudden it's $110 a ton.
Yeah,
and you've crushed it into 10 ton.
Yeah.
So now you're talking about just for the truck, let alone the digging, the blah, 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 blah. Mm. You're talking a $2,000 exercise, four times the price.
And you're not going to the closest fill site anymore. Now you're driving out to Buller, I guess that from where we are. That's the trip, you know, a couple of hours in transport now as well. So I guess, it's we do a lot of new construction, so we don't need to worry too much about that. But the knockdown rebuild, if the demo hasn't been done well, then that could potentially come up, I guess.
And then you have the issue of all of the risks and managing that risk as well. If you're taking it to a transfer station where you dump it off in your yard and then you go, oh, shit. That's never happened, not once.
That's never happened.
We just do, we always manage the risk on the way through and you cut that off before that's ever happened.
Correct. And I guess, you know, I guess that's one of the things actually, we focus on new construction. And the reason we do that is because the materials are the same and we can find end homes for those materials. We can actually put time into it. So let's say you're doing just skip bins for everyone. You don't know what you're getting. Lots of domestic bins is what would have asbestos in it, by the way, as well. Oh, yeah. The builders have, you know, they know their responsibility in regards to that. Because we just deal with the same materials, we have good end places for all these materials. We've got good procedures, we've got the right bins in our transfer station. And that's why we focus on new construction and no asbestos.
I actually have an interesting story that I know about asbestos.
Okay.
However, it may or may not be true, but do not ever let the truth get in the way of a good story because an old man told me while me and him were having a beer at a pub. Okay, now he's in the know too. He's no joker. So he told me that the asbestos fund, part of it, is allocated towards either remediation or payouts and that there has been like one or two successful payouts or remediations that have accessed the fund. Oh, yeah. And the rest of it just sits there. And he said that it's billions of dollars sitting there because every levy that's paid, a percentage goes into, hang on a second, we're making this a priority, prescribed, reportable. Yeah. Did well there,
yeah,
thank you.
Good, yeah.
You know, waste. And part of that should go towards the cleanup of this product that is devastating to the community. And so if we run into a football oval or an entire suburb that has this waste strewn.
Which is every suburb. Every suburb that had a tip.
Ever. we have this money sitting there that they can access to clean it. But they made the threshold so hard to jump through that no one or very few people have been able to ever jump through it.
Yeah.
And he said, by good authority, might be wrong, billions of dollars sitting there that no one can get to. Because, of course, it always comes down to the developer. They just handball that shit down, you know, and then...
And then asbestos claims, am I right by saying that it falls back on the last employer or something?
Well, there's the last employer, there's work cover, yeah. There's, you know, that Hardy board had to pay out a huge $400 million claim or some shit to the people. But, you know, at the end of the day, what's the levy for?
Yeah.
You know, where does the levy go? Is it just a slush fund that they just, you know, add more into the pot?
Sure.
Which, like I said before, like there has to be some sort of hurdle to jump over. We are leading the world in terms of renewables, in terms of sustainability, in terms of all of these things. And I think that that's actually great. Like it elevates our business far more than if you were doing site cleans in Mexico, if they even exist,
yeah,
let's
sure.
say, you know. But no disrespect to Mexicans, of course, but I can't imagine, you know, you're doing too many site cleans.
That may be the waste levy increase that has meant that. But also maybe it's the, I guess there's like a bit of a sustainable movement, whether that's just greenwash or whatever it's called. But
no, I don't know if it needs to be double, but 10 years ago, $80 cat C, now $160 cat C. Like that is underlyingly, it is driving some of this inflation as well. That's, you know, like we need to keep a lid on this. Like, you know, my kids are never going to buy a house.
Yeah.
I saw a thing that said there is no suburb within 100 kilometres of Sydney that you could buy anything as a single income $100,000 employee.
I also heard that it takes 15 years to save the deposit. An average, that it takes 15 years to save the deposit to buy a house now, which seems out of reach as well.
Well, there's 15 years to do it, and then you've got 30 years at a mortgage. You know, you're putting a noose around your neck for your first home. You know, what? Like our parents bought a house. This is where they talk about what their parents got versus what we did. They were able to have a single income. Mum, you know, no, we're not getting into that part, but, you know, just for ease of conversation,
sure.
Mum stays at home looking after kids, dad goes to work, able to pay a mortgage and able to take a holiday and have two cars in the driveway. You know, now we've got a dual income household, only one kid, maybe share a car, and you still can't afford the house and you're renting.
Now, so maybe the answer is to have three people in a relationship.
I don't know if we can put that on this podcast. I don't think we can dive too far into that.
To be fair, you know, I guess...
However, I'm all about it. Well, you know, like if that's what it has to be. Is the third person rich? Are there any people like, you know, that are willing and able to be rich and come and sit with me?
You know? I think, I see that. People talk about the house. So I'm not, I own a house, but I'm not about buying a house, and I've kind of done it for security of the family, and I don't think buying a house is a really great investment personally. And I think that because I don't think the house pricing is going to go where it's gone for my parents.
Yeah, but also look, what it did was is unless you're willing to have a lifestyle change, then your house, all you're doing is trading one house for another house and paying stamp duty. So you buy a house, let's just say in the city, you got $1 million house. When you buy it now, it turns into a $5 million house. You look like you made $4 million. If you still want to buy the similar style house that you lived in, you're paying $5
million. Yeah.
If you're willing to change, then maybe you can catch $1 million in your pocket. Yeah, downsize, downgrade, you know, but no one does. Everyone wants to go up. So in actual fact, you're probably in a million, now you're at 5 million, and you take on a mortgage like as big as you can to do it. And all that does, again, is drive everything up.
And people say, oh, you know, it's an investment. But I think that the house, I think, you know, there's five sort of, well, let's just say a couple of criteria that meets a good investment. House purchase, and there's a different set of criteria that is the perfect house you want to buy to live in, or a property you want to live in, and the chance of those four or five existing the same
in the same residence or the same property.
Yeah, I don't think so. So I think you're either buying a house that you want to live in that's a bad investment, or you're buying an investment and you don't want to really live there.
Possibly,
And so I do live where I want to live, but I don't think that it's necessarily a great investment.
So I have some conversations going forwards and backwards with some people in finance that I know very well, and people who help me take care of both Jimmy Starbucks money and, you know, Starbucks Group's money.
Sure.
You know, I got some people involved. Superannuation. So my point is that if I need my super, I'm fucked. If I need to, like, that superannuation that I'm paying into, the wage and whatever else and blah, 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 I've gone really bad if that's what I need when I'm 60.
Yeah, I think the same. Do you pay into it?
I pay the minimum.
Yeah.
They're like, it's an insurance policy. You should dump more into it. And then if anything ever happens, well, you've got your super, you can't get to it. I get it.
Lock and key kind of thing.
Yeah. I get it. I know it is an insurance policy. But what about if I take the 100 grand, buy another truck?
I agree.
You know, like maybe I am who I am and why I am because you see safety in your super, I see another digger. Like,
yeah.
You know, bring that girl on and let's start digging.
That's the challenge. That was the challenge in growing my business, and you know, obviously, I have a wife, right? And so she
can't wait till she watches this, and you're like, why did you describe me as a wife?
Well,
like,
she's actually,
why did the shoulders go up?
Because she's actually not my wife. She's my partner for, you know,
with kids. 8 years. Yeah, yeah, same. But
she'd like that.
A wife. You know, it changed. It was this and now it's this. So I'm so sorry, honey. I love you. I didn't mean it, but I did tell everyone I have our wife.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. You so saved it.
The, yeah, my risk is.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Well, exactly. I mean, she wanted to buy a house a long time ago and I was buying diggers. That's what I was buying. And I remember one of the, you know, arguments we had once was, that better not be your digger. You know, where...
No, it's not. It's not. It's a rental one. I just own the stickers.
It actually wasn't my digger, but mine was on its way. So that it's digger that actually runs up is my mate's digger, but mine was on its way.
Now I've got two.
Yeah.
I didn't actually mean it. I tripped, fell, signed the contract, and now it's here. And, like, you know, my sales rep back then was Ash. You know, like, Ash needed a sale, you know, and we really need one.
Yeah.
We can't be hiring them. That's making someone else money. We should buy them all ourselves. I used to be a menace. Like, now it's a far more calculated, you know, what we're doing, how we're doing it, finance, but... You know, given me, you know, this is your ROI and all of that bullshit. But back in the day, I'm like,
buy him.
I needed a posi track. And he's like, well, when do you need one? And I'm like, oh, no, now. And he's like, if you meet me now, in Essendon, we can sign the contract, and I think I can get you one next week.
At a 10% interest rate, at a 12% interest rate.
Oh, like, next week. Yes. No, we did. That's a true story. I needed one, and I'm sure you've been there before. You're like, we are so busy. I got a guy who can drive a truck. I got the machine that can do it, but I haven't got the truck.
We bought a truck at auction for more than the cost of a new truck because I needed a truck.
Business.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you, so I've got one, a water cart.
Yeah.
I was doing a big, speaking about asbestos, I was doing a 30,000 cubic meter asbestos job. Yeah. Big job. It was really heavy because it was like real high priority sites, so therefore slower. You know, like we had all of it done. We had all of the parts of it, the hygiene and blah, blah, blah. And so I had to have a water cart. Of course. But it's going to take 2.5 months, and this brown dog ain't fucking hiring no water cart for 2.5 months. We're buying.
Yeah.
So the only auction was on was like a Slattery's or a Pickles auction, and they had like four water carts. So we're home and host. No problem.
Everything's trash.
There was only one that was trash, the small little one.
Yeah.
So there was two nice big ones, maybe 100 grand, 120 grand in a good market. And they're coming up and they're like at 150. And I'm like, fuck, no, there is no way I'm buying that. Yeah. That is a rip off. First one, go on, you know, it was some, maybe 120 grand, 135 grand. I'm out. Next one, 120 grand goes 150. And I'm like, ooh, might be in trouble here. Next one, I'll start clicking. Yeah. So that one was like a 75 grand, went for 100.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. We got to the last one. The little ugly duckling. Yeah, so we've gone from these nice 12,000 litre water carts, a cannon on it, you know, reflective tape down the side, 100,000 Ks only in a big truck, so it's still plenty of life. And we get down to the little 4-ton, you know, like crew truck that has a 3,000 litre water tank on the back. Absolute shit. And I'm clicking. I have to have it. Next week I have to have it. It doesn't have to leave the site, but it has to be there. There is no way. And so I'm clicking. So these are a 20 grand water cart, 40 grand, 45 grand, 50 grand. 55 grand, 60 grand it goes for. I buy the thing triple. So I didn't want to spend an extra 10%. I ended up paying triple. I've still got that absolute piece of shit. We went to go get it roadworthy, and the guy's like, listen, it's going to be like 30, 40 grand.
Water carts like, have rust.
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 They rust. Like the rust. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
You know, so if you ever want to know how good of a businessman I am, so that I didn't get ripped off 10 grand, I bought something for triple that I now can't sell. And is now, mind you, it's actually been a really good water cart because it means that, you know, it's a dedicated on-site one, which you don't usually get. And I'd be fucking around, stealing it all the time, washing a road over here, you know, getting the driver to go to, you know, the middle of a bum fucking asshole where, you know, like to wash a machine I had one. But because I've got this donkey, it just stays on site. That's where it's at. You know, we don't move it. It's just there.
Yeah.
Starts every time. A nice little... whatever it is. Isuzu?
Perfect. That's all I have, by the way. So all my trucks are Isuzu. I bought... in the early days, I had a Hino or something, and I spoke to a guy, and he said, you want a good truck? Just buy an Isuzu. And I guess it's... this is another whole part, another discussion, but, you know, I've bought the appropriate trucks for my industry, which I think is Isuzu. I think, you know, in sort of earth moving, you've got, you know, Dick Swingers, Max and Kenworths and the shiniest things and whatever.
No, we don't have any of them. Not one.
Keep these things clean in the construction industry?
First off, we have to get the delineation and the name correct. There's a definition. The super trucker.
The super trucker,
We have super truckers. Now, the super truckers, you must, without a doubt, and I know some of them, and I actually know some will probably be watching because I have them be my friends, because I, myself, like a Dick Swinging truck. No super trucker though, because a super trucker must have some qualities about him.
Okay, yeah, right.
He must be willing to wash.
Every day.
He loves washing.
Yeah.
But he's also one of the best drivers that you can ever get, because he is driving a boat that doesn't turn, that has absolutely no vision, that has lights all over it and chrome for days, but he can put it where you need it. Very important that the super trucker has those qualities about him. Loves hard work, a very understanding wife, because imagine you work 12 hours and then you go, I'll be home at 8 o'clock. And she goes, it's 6 o'clock and you're at the yard. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I got to wash the truck because I pulled through a wheel wash today, just one.
Yeah, sure.
And now the truck's filthy because it's wintertime and wheel washers don't have clean water. But so I got to wash it, the super trucker. And what usually happens is just so you know, a lot of the super truckers wash on their own time.
Yeah.
I've employed some.
Yeah, that's...
You've got to be fair, but they're fair back.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, I've had one in particular. So he'd wash about 5 hours a week. Mm. I'd pay him two.
Yeah.
The other three are ridiculous.
It's passion, I guess, isn't it? It's you got to have... Yeah.
But then he'd come to me and he'd be like, Jimmy. I'd be like... I won't say his name because it's not fair. But he'd be like, Jimmy. I go, yeah. And he goes, you know, it was a few months ago that I spoke to you about those chrome rims. I found you a really cheap price. I found the cheapest ones you can get, and we can import them through someone else. $3,000. And you'd go, nah, I can't. And then it'd be like, I need you to go to, well, we got a pickup today in Port Campbell, Warrnambool.
Okay, yeah.
I need you to go to Warrnambool. And he's like, yeah, knock an hour or two off, but get those rims, eh?
Okay.
And you go, hang on, knocking an hour or two off, that's going to save me $150, you know. The rims are three grand. I'm not that good at math, but that math don't math. But eventually, your truck ends up with, you know, fat tires, visors, bug deflectors, you know, new bar. Well, I have to buy a new bar because the old bar, she's no good now.
So I guess from a business point of view, return on investment, is it worth it in your industry to run the super truck thing? Looks good. I figured it wasn't. I think that for an owner operator, I would probably have one. If I was a truck driver, I would have something like that for myself. I'd be looking after it. I'd be washing it.
I think the first one was because my first truck was a Hino, and my dad, he had Japanese trucks, little motors, big gearboxes, big diffs, you know, spring suspension, don't get bogged when you're trying to pull up the side of a mountain when it's been raining, you know, can't really break them and can put your foot flat to the floor all day and you're not going to go speeding.
Mm.
You know, 380 horsepower max. So I used to run truck and dog, 385 horsepower in the Hino Dolphin.
Yeah, okay.
The model was the Dolphin.
Quite big cab.
FS1K, 1999 model. That was my first truck. She did 800,000 Ks, never let me down. I never broke down bad enough to not get home. Light on fuel, compared.
Light.
You know? And great turning circle, could put the dog trailer into jobs that other people couldn't.
Mm.
You know, I ended up being a mediumly good steerer back then. Now, does the super trucker work? In terms of branding, you have some people who love the super trucks. In terms of return on investment, for a while there, Kenworths, you could buy them and then sell them for the same money 5 years later.
Mm.
So
that's good.
That's good.
Yeah.
But in terms of parts, reliability, fuel, finding another super trucker because of you have to buy the chrome, you have to pay the big rate and everything else like that. It's just a different – I'll say it's a different business model that takes different things. We all know some companies in Melbourne that are running around with the blinged up, you know, like Schmick truck.
Yeah.
And they look the part.
Yeah.
You know, and some people want to put them on their sites. Does it work for them? Yes. Do I have some? Yes. But I also got ugly ducklings. Yeah, I got Nissans that run around and some Isuzus. If I'm going to buy more trucks, I'll probably go one step further than Japanese and buy Chinese. Like because that, yeah. Yeah, because like at the end of the day, we want a dirt taxi.
Yeah.
That is safe. Like, don't get me wrong. We need safety.
Sure.
Safety is the number one, and I'm sure you agree. It's actually an unsaid. It's so high as a priority that it's over there now, safety. We need the truck to be safe. After that, we need it to be reliable. And then we need it to do its reliability and do its job together.
Sure.
That's a dirt taxi.
It. That's about it, yeah.
And the cheapest dirt taxi that is reliable and it can rock up to work while being safe is what I want.
Yeah. I think like I said earlier to you, that the way my business finds its drivers is always through employment at labour level. So basically we employ our labourers, which we have maybe like 40 or so labourers. They start as labourers and they've got an opportunity to progress within the company and earn more money at each increment. So the labourers may become machine operators, and providing they've got a good driving record, their personal driving record, we will then supply a truck licence to them. And they'll start in an MR truck for that. And then they can go from there to our HR trucks or HC. We've got trucker dogs and semi-tippers and whatnot as well. But all of our drivers are not all of them, but a lot of them are fairly new to the industry and haven't been driving trucks their whole life. Like I see more of the earth movers, spoil trucks, I suppose. I don't know. So our trucks get knocked around a little bit because they're a bit of a learning sort of truck, you know?
I've had trucks being knocked around, which is politically correct, very PC of you.
Sure.
We've had trucks knocked around from drivers who've been in driving full-time 20 years. The interface with the traffic and how it's all moving and everything else like that, the amount of people on their phones, or just with the attention span of a brick, you know, these days. I actually had a bit of an issue lately. Someone in a machine hit something. Right, not a big issue, you know, or whatever. And no one was hurt, of course. Safety is always first. Now we look at the problem.
Sure.
Well, how can you, like, it was clear that the attention span just wasn't there. He drove forwards into it. Forwards.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? Like, I read these things on... You know, and it's a constant theme underlying in these podcasts for me. What are we doing to ourselves with this social media and everything else like that? That I can have a guy now, supposedly not on his phone, which I'll take it for his word and everything else. So I asked him, "Okay, you weren't on your phone. What were you doing in a machine that moves at 4 kilometres an hour or 5 kilometres an hour?" That you drove into a wall.
Yeah.
Where were you looking? Because it's not like, you know, it's not like you look and you go like this and you're doing 60 and bam, whoa.
Sure.
You're doing 4. So you're doing...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed-sponsored jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed-sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
about walking pace. So it's like you're 10 metres away, you look and you go, oh, I should stop. And then you just, I'd really like an explanation.
How do you deal with that internally? Do you say that's an accident, or how, what's the process?
Process is, straight away we look at if it's a notifiable incident, so what level of damage it is. We then, well, first off, always, is everyone safe? You know, it, like, I keep leaning back to that because now I'm on my brain. I send my safety girl down there, compliance girl down there. We do a full incident report. We see if we notify WorkSafe ourselves. That one wasn't a notifiable incident because of a few bits and pieces. I don't know exactly because, of course, you know, I don't want to say the wrong thing. Yeah. But that one wasn't. But then we follow through the process. We then go through retraining on the piece of equipment as well. You know, and then depending on how it looks, we either give a written warning, we don't allow them back in the machine, or depending on the level of severity of it, they might be terminated from their employment if it's quite, you know.
It's hard when you've got a machine operator that, you know, you might pay well, and then you say, okay, well, we're going to discipline this employee. How are we going to do it? Well, we want to take him out of a machine, but we don't want to terminate him completely.
How do you, like, I have this conversation with my general manager often. How could you, like, disciplining people?
It's wild when you're an adult and you need to discipline another adult.
How do you do it in a way that is received as it should be received without turning them against you, or without putting a bad taste in their mouth to the point that they go out and get one of the million zillion jobs that every recruiter who is on my LinkedIn sending me a thing daily, you know, is throwing in front of their face, you know, like especially a few years ago when, you know, you couldn't find guys. I'm sure you went through the same thing. You're really struggling to find a guy. You have someone who is clearly being absent-minded that you need to discipline.
Do something. Yeah, sharpen him up somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you do that without him saying, catch ya, I'm out.
Yeah.
And you go,
I didn't want that.
Like you ran into a wall, dude. Like you were moving 4 kilometres an hour. Like the wall's been there the whole job. You've been there the whole job. Like you know how to drive the machine. You know, the wall didn't move. I'm confused.
One of the things as well is you think, you don't want the guy to leave because maybe he's learned his lesson now and he knows not to use his phone, let's say he was, or he knows to watch when he's driving, or, you know, he knows to have a spotter when he's reversing or whatever. So they've had the accident, it's cost the company already. Do you get rid of him, put someone else in the seat, and then they're going to have the same problem and then they're going to do the same thing and you go get rid of them? So I definitely am about giving guys chances. And it definitely has burnt me as well.
Well, hasn't it ever? Yep. And the lessons are best learnt when the toast is burnt.
Yeah.
And you know, there's nothing like relearning lessons, you know. Like, so I actually gleaned that from this podcast when I was having a chat very early on, and I can't quite remember which one it was on. But, you know, we were speaking about values of the company. Might have been with Adam. You know, I think it was Adam from AH Fencing. Right. And we were talking about company values, and he set up his company values. Do you have company values have you gone through that exercise for you guys?
We have gone through the exercise.
Posted on a wall and you talk about them in every meeting, or are they getting dust in a corner? Which, mind you, no judgment here from either side, because I don't have them, but even if I did have them and made them earlier on in my business, I reckon they'd be gathering dust.
They'd get dust, yeah. So I guess with changing workforce, it's something hard. They gather dust, sure.
I'm thinking of bringing them in now. But I don't think that the number is the number that you need. I think that you can make your own important things. And so far, I reckon I've got one.
What's your company value?
Yeah, so far, one, just in case everyone wants to know. And it's not sustainability, okay? Don't relearn lessons.
Yeah, yeah.
Relearning lessons is really expensive because of the company and how they grow. and that the lesson that you learned for $500 10 years ago now costs you maybe 50 grand now, because it's a it's an exponential scale, right? Sure. It's not linear, like the same yeah. problem but times by three. If 500 doesn't turn into 1500, it's like to the is it factor of three?
That's like maths.
Yeah, that's yeah like so yeah. you go five to the factor of three, five times five, 25 times five is like 150, 125. Yeah, there we go. Sure. That's what, and my, I have a problem, and it cost me like, I reckon 10 at the beginning, and now it's going to cost me like 300 or 400.
Yeah.
Right. You know, in all sorts of different ways. It's not like you have to 400, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's a slow burn,
yeah.
Like it's a slow burn, it's everything else, and the problems that we have aren't like that anymore. It's just even unrealized gains and, you know, profit that you've missed out on, and all of this yeah. stuff is how the costs can come. But don't relearn lessons, and that's the worst with the people, because you kick yourself because you have all of these signs that you know and you've dealt with before. I'm sure you're the same as me. We've employed hundreds of people.
Yeah.
I know. I've dealt with it before.
Yeah.
You know, like if on the third day you're ringing up and rock up two or three hours late and you sounded like you're getting there, you're not
going to change.
It's not going to change. And then you give them a chance, and then you have the, you know, the once in a blue moon guy that it just so happened that on his second day of work something did happen. But it's far more likely that next week he's going to ring up and say, oh, you know, my missus has had to go to hospital, my grandma's died, you know, my dog ate my homework, my car battery.
It's exactly what you said. So, yeah, you put up with these things because you want a full workforce and you've got deadlines to meet. And even somebody that's only rocks up 3 days as a full-time employee potentially is still better than him rocking up no days or no one rocking up those 3 days.
Well, I've found that, you know, and I'm going through this at the moment. Yeah. I'm changing some things and about how we do it, which is probably we've ran historically up until a year, 18 months, 2 years ago as a very, like, family-orientated, you know, like, tight-knit group. But it makes it real hard to keep a tight-knit family group, you know, at the size that we are. And we probably, you know, tried to keep it together. But now the processes, the procedures, the this, the that, and it makes it far more challenging to, you know, get given the excuses or the reasons and then actually listen to them, because it says that if you – the form says that X, Y, Z, and you did X, Y, and Z, so that means...
terminated.
Terminated. That means down here you did...
yeah.
Yep, okay. You did those three things, so sorry.
Yeah.
We will pay you all of your stuff, of course, and thank you.
And that, yeah, that's hard, and we've had to do that, and we've had to terminate more recently some sort of longer-standing employees.
Very interesting. I've gone through some of the same issues.
And some of it is burn me twice or three times type of thing, learning your lessons more than
once. What about 20 times? Is 20 times from a long-term employee enough, or 25 times?
Yeah. So I've had the same thing. And it's hard to do, and also then you've got a truck that's not getting work, so it's costly as well. But in the long run, it's what you've got to do, and you've got to do it for the rest of the employees so they know.
Well, that's the big part for me. The long-term employees that end up, you know, tarnishing, you know, the very culture that you try so hard, and I'm sure you try really hard, just like we do. We try so hard to keep the culture, and, you know, they figured out some pain points and some pinch points, and they've gone through it a few times, and their patience might be low, and I understand it from their part. But, you know, they're so established and comfortable, you know, that they feel happy, and they should feel happy to voice their opinions or do whatever, you know, or to, you know, maybe take, like I had one that used to take off every single day before a long weekend and every single day after, long-term employee.
Yeah.
And I get it.
office staff or
field staff, charge of jobs.
Yeah.
Makes it real challenging, eh? Like, because putting in for, and the first year I didn't catch it. We didn't know. Right, it was before this TikToks came out, and they said you can turn your 20 days public holiday.
It was go to the toilet for 15 minutes every morning.
And it was before that. So we got these leave, and he's like, you know, we started to implement the process like a fair few years ago now around our annual leave for logging it to try and be fairer, because we sometimes ran into problems with, you know, not being over the top of it and then having five foundational core members of the team off at the same time, and now we're fucked. So let's make it a bit more of a process. So he said, because we're making it into a process, I just thought I'd get most of my stuff done in one time for the whole year.
Yeah.
Giddy up.
Like, I don't even think that far ahead.
I barely made it to here on time. It's been booked in 3 weeks. And so then he put them through. And then it was like, you know, days off after Easter, before Anzac Day, after Australia Day, Labor Day. You don't know. Like,
there's a lot of them.
There's a shitload of them, and if you sprinkle your annual leave days, you can get a lot of time off.
Yeah, but overseas.
Yeah, but now I've got a guy who's running the job that, you know, everyone knows is tied to me because he's been around for so long. And mind you, your annual leave days are yours to use how you want to use them. But as far as, and I respect that, and I'm happy for you.
In the best interest of the business.
But there's the interest of the business and taking off every, and so now we were, especially at the start of the year, where the public holidays are like bam, 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 bam. Like, this bloke had shitloads of time off, and then he's coming back to the job and swinging his power around when everyone's left, you know, especially around the Anzac Easter break. Like, the guy was at work 3 seconds in April. Three, not two, not four. He walked into work and then took annual leave off again because we took the 10 days off for the Easter. Then the Anzac Day was on a Friday. He takes the Thursday and the Monday. And now all of a sudden, he was literally at work for like 6 days in April. And then rocking back in. And like, the guys who were stepping up, you know, it was actually a girl who was stepping up on that time, looking after the job. Well, now she gets beaten back down again. And who's the employer you really need to be taken care of? And the difficulty is that the guy who's been around the longest probably isn't the best right then. It's actually the person who's standing up and not doing all of that. Just so, and it's just that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's really hard. And then you're in a position, you've got to confront the person. I guess I find that challenging, to be fair.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, you can't take your holiday. And we had a really recent event the same where the office staff took time off on the same week. One person was non-negotiable they were both non-negotiable. They both had their flights booked. One person said, okay, I'll change it. I'll change my flights. The leave was not approved, but they're taking it anyway, non-negotiable. And then so as a boss, you're like, what do we do in this situation? Discipline. And you're like, well, I really need this person. They've been around.
And they're great. And they're great. Like, and they're great 90-something percent of the time. But at the moment, they're not being great. At the moment, it's being really challenging. And, you know, there's two sides to every seesaw. I get it.
Yeah.
I get that you need a break. Anything. I get you need an anything, whether it's a break, a family, to go here.
Definitely.
I don't care even if you want to go watch surfing at Bondi Beach. You need something. But it's actually in complete opposition to what the business needs.
Mm.
And your job, my job, I did your job, I did my job, your job. So I'll change it. Your job, my job, is to be the captain of the business.
Yeah.
And take care of that ship.
And keep it harmonious.
And keep everyone happy, keep the money going, keep everything happening on the ship, you know. And that might not be you going on a holiday, eh?
Yeah, it's really challenging. So that part is, yeah, I think that's really challenging what you said. I'd like to see what you do in that space. If you're creating systems for that, like to look at that. Because at the moment, yeah, we've got basically a whiteboard where the office staff or operational staff just put their time.
I think that one of the things we did first up is we said, you know, right or wrong, and please, a HR person, crawl up in my DMs and tell me that I'm wrong. I'm always happy to be wrong and learn about business and stuff like that. The perspective of the leave is that they're non-negotiables, or that it's a process after they decide when to take leave. So the first thing that needs to change for any system to work is that you need it to be that we ask for leave and that leave is approved at a certain time. So the first thing we changed is we said, right, in 6 months, this is what we're going to be bringing in. This is how we're going to be bringing it in. This is the reason why we're bringing it in. And then we will remind you so that you can still use the old system, which is when you tell us that you're going to watch surfing.
Yeah.
Whatever other activity you want to do, skiing, wakeboarding, you know, I don't know, rollerblading. Like, the amount of shit people take time off for is unbelievable.
Sure,
like, yeah. I just do my hobbies outside of work time. But yeah. Hey,
and everything else as yeah, well, your car servicing,
yeah, go to the post office, go to the post office, pay the bills. You know, there's BPAY, you can do it at any time. Yeah. But then we changed, so we slowly but surely implemented that. And that would mean that your whiteboard that you have and that is there, instead of being put on the whiteboard and then telling you that they're taking the time off, it would then be a, hey, I'm thinking of doing this at this time. And then you look at the whiteboard and you say, but David's already got the time off then and we can't have both of you off. I am happy for you to go talk to David. And I'm happy for David to come talk to me. And so it's a more of a discussion on a level playing field rather than going,
yeah,
I'm off.
And then, of course, then it causes conflict amongst the two people as well when you say, oh, well, you can't. Like you said, David's put his whole year's worth of leave in all at once, which they do. And we've had plenty of staff do that.
Yes.
But
also, you didn't. And they did. And so they're more organised and you're ad hoc in it. And I understand that you have time. But you have we've got 47 weeks on the board that you can take it off. Is there any chance that we can sort of massage this to work so that the captain of the ship can still run a good ship? And I know you care about the company because you are a good employee.
That's true, yeah.
You know? But at the moment,
it's usually about one extra day at the end of the day anyway, isn't it?
It's usually about a very minuscule amount of time. And then also that perspective, depending on how you engage in that conversation, that means that let's call her Susie. Not that I have a Susie, but I do have a David. Yeah. Let's say that Susie, next time I'll say when she's planning the trip, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to have a real quick chat to Jason just to see what's happening around, you know, just to get a feel. I haven't looked at the whiteboard, and then some of the problems are just going away, you know, autonomously almost. So the problems that exist now aren't existing because of the process change that needs to be very fair across the board, and there needs buy-in to it. Like any process that happens needs that buy-in for Susie to sit down and go, before I book it, I'll check the whiteboard, I'll talk about it, and 90% of the time I get my leave off anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, that's something. I guess that's, once again, gets into the bigger business side of things when you've got to worry about that. And for us, it's happened all pretty quickly. I guess, you know, we're the company established 7 years ago, EcoTrans, and we've doubled our revenue and trucks year to year over that 7 years. So it's kind of...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so I guess putting the systems in place has been quick, and I've never run a company that's, you know, doing upwards of $15 million a year turnover. So it's all new to me, and you're trying to get people in. Some, you know, we've had managers in that have lasted a small amount of time, and you know, I guess it
I employed a sales rep. He's still in the industry, and if you're watching, you screwed me, but that's okay. I'll never mention a name because it's not my style. He came on board as a sales manager, and after 3 weeks, drove the Hilux I gave him and moved his entire house from Point Cook to Druin. And it took him 2 weeks to go forwards and backwards, and he didn't make one phone call in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And when I called him up and said, what are you doing? He said, moving house. Hmm. And I said, yep, I'm paying you. And he said, okay, I quit. And I said, right, so then we're doing all of the Ks, the East Link, the City Link, yeah. the blah, 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 blah. He worked for 2 weeks, bought him a car. That's when I used to buy the cars like straight up,
yeah.
Hilux, yeah. you know, 50 grand on a car, fuel card. And what did he do? Hooks up a trailer and moves his whole house from Drew and like this.
Yeah.
You piece of shit. But you can't taint everyone with that brush. And you can't even mention the name. And you can't do anything like that. Like, I'd be a bad guy if I mentioned it. Yeah, and you'd probably look at me and go, fuck, Jimmy, that was a bit harsh to mention their name. You know, like, look, I know we did it, but...
It's hard. I guess we've only recently employed a business development female, actually, in construction. So business has kind of just organically grown for the past 7 years. And then in around September, I went, is things slowing down a little bit? I kind of got an inkling around that period. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to start looking for someone in business development.
Mm-hmm.
Not specifically a female that ended up that way. It was what I feel is probably the best candidate for the job. But
that's it.
Come January, we employed her. And we've never had a business development person. So it's a different level of control for an employee. They're not in the office all the time. It's challenging.
Super hard, eh?
Super hard, and super a lot hard. Of trust involved. And, you know, we talk, you talk about working from home and the trust levels that are involved in that. I think business development person is just next level because they've got excuses not to be in the office or not to be answerable sometimes or whatever. I had a job as a business development person, and I know how you can take the piss in that role.
I think that with it, you know, like I speak about like the killers, you know, the 18 players. 18 players take that responsibility and like almost like whip themselves with it. You know, more hours, more emails, more time, more availability than anyone. And they can not come to the office for a week. Not that I want them.
Yeah.
But you get what I mean.
Like,
they are on, yeah. kicking ass. Yeah, I don't know where they are in Melbourne, but there is some ass kickers right now driving around with Starbuck on their car, Starbuck on their shirt and in their heart and brain, you know,
yeah.
just going around killing it.
Yeah,
there's some people that are taking the piss and leaning back onto the doing it for the other employees, the people who are taking the piss, are they pulling down those, like, killers out there, like, that are really going? I've got five BDMs, you know, like, running around trying to do that, and it's a real danger, you know, to... They could pay good money.
I think it's good with five because then they're competing against each other for the top dog position, maybe. And I also, you can say, oh, well, you know, David, he's...
Sorry, David, you're just copping.
Is it? Is he not there?
No, he's in finance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, David's killing it. He's got this many new leads or this many sales. Where you've got the one, you don't know what that benchmark actually is.
So every week we have a sales meeting. So on Friday, so I don't do a long lunch, although it doesn't always work. I do meetings. Have my contracts meeting. Have a finance meeting or... you know, outstanding debtors meeting or, whatever bullshit money meeting. Then I also have a sales meeting where we all try and, because we got the two offices, we got the people who there's a bit of a competition, just a little tiny bit of a competition out there. We then all get into a room and we sit down and we discuss techniques of winning. We discuss if we're winning. We discuss if we're losing, where we're losing. You know, so tips opening and closing, you would know, can make or break a business for in what we do. You know, a week that you have be really good, tips closed, now it's real shit. So we try and get together to, you know, spitball ideas from it. But every week we also print out the numbers from the entire week that each person sent out. Each person gets a copy of where they're sitting, you know. Some people sit there and go like this.
Yeah,
they go. After they get their numbers.
Yeah.
Some people go like this. Yeah. But overall, it's the team. Like, but what I look for is and it's really funny because we actually track it. People fire at different times. And so you have the top one that maybe doesn't stay as hungry for a while, you know. Like, they're sitting at the top. It's hard to be at the top. And then you have the ones that, you know, aren't putting out the bigger numbers that all of a sudden after a month they go, oh. But because of that consistent work that they've been doing extra over more emails, more phone calls, more chasing, you know, whatever, all of a sudden.
What is it? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Hell yeah, you do.
So, yeah, a million emails and a million phone calls and you'll hit something.
You will hit something. And at the end of the day, we're probably pretty lucky now. Like, we used to ring up people and say, hey, you know, Starbucks, we move dirt, and people would be like, coffee. And you go, no, dirt. And latte, you know, one pump of caramel syrup. Now we say Starbucks and they go, great.
We've been waiting
for you to call. We got a pile of dirt to move. You know, like, we get phone calls like I would never have dreamed of in a million years, you know. Hi, Jimmy, how you going? And I say, very good. And they're like, we got 120,000 cubic meter job. And you go, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's finally happened. I'm here. What do you mean? 120,000. Now we get those phone calls all the time. It's like, hey, I've got 10,000 meters. Can you just send trucks tomorrow? Like, I had a job last week when I was in China, and he texted me and he said, could you please call? And I said, yeah. And he's like, I just want you to send some trucks tomorrow. I've got about 15,000 cubic meters. Just let me know the rate and send it.
Yeah, just full trust in the business. They know what's going on. Reliable. You're going to be there. And that's the – I guess that's the thing. And our business, it's built on being reactive. So what – EcoTrans promises is that we'll be there the next day. And other smaller, like traditional rubbish removers that do it via case, oh, I've got a bit of dirt to move tomorrow, I've got bricks to move next day, I'll be there on Wednesday or Thursday. Well, for the build, for a new construction now to make money, it has to be moving.
Yeah, but also it moves so fast that the vision that they have isn't there like it used to be. So they have tilers, plasterers, painters, maybe a roofer patching up something and blah, 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 blah. And if the and that cage at the front can go from half full to full full in half a day.
Yep.
Site manager was there yesterday morning. It was only like 10%. Comes back the next day, it's all the way full.
Introducing Eco AI.
Eco AI.
So,
guys, stop right now. Pull out your checkbooks. Yeah.
300 cameras are now on site. We started this new division of EcoTrans in January, and it was based off exactly what you said. I was like, how can the supervisors not know when the bins are full? And the supervisor was like, I looked in the morning, it wasn't full. So, we've currently got 300 cameras deployed across new construction sites with many more in our office getting put out daily. And basically it's AI integrated software that looks at the bin volume and sends alerts to the supervisors and ourselves when the bin becomes full.
AI cameras? Yeah. What do you mean? AI? I'm fucked. But in all honesty, how great for your client? And how great for you. Although we might not have finished exactly and done the whole EcoTrans story, I think that we've gotten right into a few bits and pieces with the AI. I appreciate you coming down. And like always, if anyone would like to come on, have a chat. This one's somehow ended up being well over an hour, but we'll shorten it right up. Jason, EcoTrans, you want to say anything else?
I suppose in terms of business, I guess don't let I've got nothing else to say.
We'll
talk for 45 minutes. I mean, an hour and 45 minutes.
An hour and 45 minutes. That's been the longest one by far, and that was real easy chatting.
Okay,
that's cool. thank you very much for coming in. We do an awkward handshake at the end, just so you know. So we've reached weirdly you underneath the microphone, me around the microphone, and get it done. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Done. Thank you. See ya.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping.
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.